Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 249.
This week on the podcast, Democrats are proud of the work they've done forking tons of money into a radically boring candidate. We've still got it.
And Democrats are attempting to protect America from healthcare ruin with the one skill they definitely have, making extra long-winded speeches about details.
Plus, the Senate GOP is still too shy to tell us how their Obamacare repeal bill works out for regular Americans. I'm sure it's not because it will take away our healthcare, don't worry.
And Jared Kushner apparently has an audible voice that we've now all heard.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right. We're coming to you
midweek. With a shorter podcast.
Shorter podcast.
Unless we go on too long about healthcare.
We might.
It's supposed to be a shorter podcast.
Yeah, or we might go on too long about how the Democratic Party is fucking awful.
Ruining everything once again.
We only have two subjects, but they're things that we've been known to rail on about for...
So true.
Yes, for many hours.
We are in the midst of receiving the results on this Ossoff-handled Georgia special election race.
Who knew
that we were going
to get to do...
We didn't
breaking
know,
news.
Well, we might not get to because we don't know the results
we
yet.
We don't. I know. I was like, when we decided that we were going to do it on Tuesday, it had nothing to do with these special elections that were going on today. Also, you didn't know there were two. We're going to get to that in a second.
That's right.
There's two. I was when I texted Lila this morning and I was like, we're going to get to do breaking news tonight. But it turns out, despite being, on electronic voting down there in Georgia with, I think I read somewhere, no way to backtrack it.
Obviously. Otherwise, how are they going to hack it?
Like, I don't understand why...
Electronic voting takes so long.
Why are we going to have machines vote for it? Well, not vote for us. But,
well,
I mean,
maybe.
Who knows? We don't know. Why are we going to have machine voting if that machine can't tell us immediately how everybody voted on it?
I guarantee, with all government things, it's like you fill it out on a machine, and then for some reason, someone at the facility has to fill out 3,000 pounds of paperwork by hand to get the machine results to another result who will then put it into another machine that then puts it into another paperwork cycle where suddenly, 3 months from now, you're just filling out forms and you're not sure what happened to the numbers.
Right, exactly.
I mean, that's what I think. That's why I don't think we need machine voting particularly.
Right?
I know it seems efficient.
If we're filling out as many forms as have been cast ballots.
Well, and I guarantee that if anyone could figure out how to fill out as many forms casting ballots on a computer as otherwise, it would be the U.S. government.
It's government.
Or any government.
Government. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I would say the Greek government could... far beat us in that because everyone would probably have to also stamp it 600 times.
Oh, God.
I once, to get a visa to go to Greece, had to go to 3 different offices to get it stamped 6 times by random people inside the Greek consulate. And I was like, I don't understand why one person doesn't have the authority to stamp this.
Right.
And why it took you like weeks to get this done.
Yeah.
But why are there 3 people who have to stamp things inside the consulate?
Right.
It seems like they could speak to each other and then have one agreement stamp.
Yeah.
But no.
Anyway. It looks like radically boring candidate John Ossoff is going to lose professional loser Karen Handel.
The reason that we know about this race is because Trump won this district by very little.
Yes.
And so the Democrats poured a lot of money into it, and they publicized it because they thought they could win.
Right. It's the most expensive House race by a country mile
in history.
In history. Yes.
Of all time.
Yeah.
A Georgia special election
over
race.
$56 million was spent by both sides and outside groups when you count all of that money.
Right. Yeah. It's astonishing, but also so typical that we would choose a candidate that the local newspaper has described as radically boring because we didn't make that term up. That was the local newspaper talking about John Ossoff, the Democratic candidate.
Yeah.
That we would put that kind of money into a candidate that cannot, for the life of him, find one reason to be mildly inspirational.
Right. The guy is 30 and never run for anything and doesn't live in the district.
I mean, it's like a... And he's running against a professional loser as well, but a local professional loser.
Right, yes.
It's like how Greg Gianforte in Montana had already lost statewide office when we somehow found a way to get him elected.
Right, exactly. Yes, the people of Montana
had already said no to him once.
On Greg Gianforte in favor of a Democrat.
And I still contend that maybe they thought just getting him to D.C. would get him out of Montana.
Sure.
They were like, we'll vote for that.
Yeah. Exactly.
But in any case, we're still waiting for the final results. It has been close so far, but she's starting to open up a lead.
Right. But we aren't, 56% of the results are in. I'm not exactly sure where they're coming from.
In 1 hour, there could be a com- complete difference. Maybe, and we could be celebrating the win of John Ossoff. Here's all I'm going to say about it.
Yeah.
If we don't win this race, then we're losers.
I know.
I mean, and the South Carolina seat, we have a lot more to celebrate with, even though the Republican has already been declared the victor.
Right.
Because we are far and away outperforming ourselves.
Yeah, that's the thing.
2016 in that district.
I saw a link this morning, and I don't even know where it was, but it said something. It was titled something to do with like the forgotten special election.
Right.
And it wasn't forgotten so much as you can't forget something that
you never
you
knew about.
Didn't
in the first
know
place.
To forget.
Right.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So I was like, well, what is this? Fascinating article of politicalness that I didn't know about. I was equal parts like intrigued and enraged.
That's right.
That I had not heard of it. So I clicked on it. There's a special election for Mick Mulvaney's seat.
I mean,
In South Carolina. Mick Mulvaney won this seat by 100 million, like all the percentage points. And so did Trump. It's like mostly like rural, and there's
like
some
suburban
places.
It's
like
a rural
South
Carolina district mixed in with a few like racist white people.
Bingo. Yes, exactly. So I understand that like on some level, no, you can't go pouring money into literally every single house race. Granted, there were only two today, so there's less money. But in 2018, there's going to be every single one.
Right.
And like, I get you have to pick your battles.
Sure.
And does it make more sense to pick one where Trump won by 2 percentage points and everybody there hates Trump and the rest of America has decided that they hate Trump?
Right.
Or one where Trump won by 20 points? I see the logic here. But I also feel like we should have learned things from some of the other results that we've had, like the one in Kansas.
Well,
and
say,
even on some level, the Montana one. Yes.
This is a Kansas situation because the thing that should mitigate your decision about whether or not to do that is whether or not the candidate is vastly outperforming your last run there. And that is what this candidate in South Carolina is doing.
Yes. And nobody knew. The only polling that had been done for this that I read anyway that was back in like May, and the guy was ahead by like 14 points or something, which was still even closer than Trump. But then somebody released like their own internal poll, like the Democrat, that showed that he was within 10 percentage points. Guys, he's running closer, the Democrat here, and he's already lost.
Right.
But he ran closer than at least as of with 73% of the vote in, John Ossoff is running to Karen Handel. Also, one thing that I just noticed, because we're literally looking at these results right now, John Ossoff is getting less of the vote than he did in the runoff. So he needed people to switch from Karen Handel to him. And in fact, it seems like people may have switched from him to Karen Handel, which is a concerning thing that I'm seeing there. Again, not full results, but
I mean, but this is a classic story of Democrats not knowing how to not only pick the right battle, but also to pick the right sort of mantle to run under, because I think
and the guy running in South Carolina, don't get us wrong, he was no progressive hero. The guy worked for Goldman Sachs.
I think though that when you have candidates running in conservative districts and you decide that your mantelpiece election, the guy that you're going to put all your stuff, your money behind, is like a boring nobody that nobody cares about.
Yeah.
And then you see another race that's happening that day that is another boring nobody that nobody cares about, but is vastly outperforming your last run in the district.
Yeah.
I feel like you think to yourself, let's talk about both of these races instead of just one. I don't know.
Yeah.
The Ossoff race has gotten so much press. It's because he's young.
Yes.
And kind of like, I wouldn't say handsome as much as I would say has hair.
Correct.
But I feel like that race is a race that we put all of this money into because we thought it was a shoe-in, like Hillary Clinton was a shoe-in. Like, we thought we were running that kind of a race. And I don't think those are happening anywhere.
No.
But John Ossoff literally had nothing to offer us in terms of anything to get behind other than that he wasn't in favor of Donald Trump.
I was going
to
say, you know what he had to offer us working across the aisle?
No appeal there.
That was me waking myself up from a nap.
Exactly. He was radically boring.
Totally radically
and
boring.
This result in South Carolina, both of these guys, total assholes.
Big time.
However, it's not a radically boring result.
No.
It's a really interesting result.
And in fact, it would not surprise me at all if we hear party leaders talking about that result tomorrow and not the Ossoff result.
I would I never thought we were going to win this Ossoff race because as soon as I realized how similar a style of candidate he was to Al Gore, I realized that he was...
And Hillary Clinton.
Well, and Hillary Clinton. I mean, Hillary Clinton was hated. She wasn't boring.
Right.
She lacked...
Well, she was both.
She lacked passion, but her run wasn't boring. She would never have been called radically boring.
No. True.
So she's an interesting lady. She just has a hard time expressing that to you.
Yes.
This really felt like an Al Gore...
Yeah.
Run to me where it was like somebody who was like super center of the aisle, like was running under the Democratic mantle, but probably could have run under either, let's be honest.
Right.
You know, he's running under the Democratic mantle because he's under 35 and like was just going to sort of like snore his way into office in a district where I realized that there was a close margin there. I think in a district like that, you have to be offering something exciting to make people think, hey,
right.
I'll vote in a way that I know could affect the outcome as opposed to, I mean, you can vote for a Democrat all you want in South Carolina in a rural district or a district filled with racist white suburban people and think to yourself, well, this probably won't do anything. But you can, you know, like you can be motivated to vote in outrageous ways. Brett and I were motivated to vote for Jill Stein in the presidential race by knowing that our votes didn't count.
Right. Exactly.
You know, that's I came out as a Jill Stein voter to somebody today.
Oh, yeah.
And they were like, what? And I was like, well, let me explain. Yeah. And then I bored them to tears to the extent that they were forced to just be like, all right, fine.
Yeah.
In any case, I feel like if you know that your change in vote could change the outcome, you have to feel like you're voting for something and not just like for not a guy.
Yep.
And that isn't what we have in this Ossoff race.
It is not.
I hope that they are serious about the 50-state strategy, but this doesn't feel like 50-state strategy style shenanigans to me.
No.
Because if we were really working with the 50-state strategy, not only would we all know about both of these races, but we would know about all of the next upcoming races that are coming up because we'd be hearing about them.
Yeah.
And I worry about 2018 because I am becoming a hard and fast doubter.
Yeah. Well, this is what I know, because what's going to happen, the thing about 2018 that is troublesome to me based on what we've done with these two races, because there are only two races here.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
As we said, there's going to be all of them in 2018. They can't spend
$50 million on all these races.
On every single one of them. So as you do in every election cycle, I mean, this is what gets
done.
You
pick and choose who gets all the big money.
You, on some level, pick your candidates. Granted, there will be primaries, but you sort of throw your weight behind candidates. And I fear that they are going to look at the map and they're going to say, all right, this was, the starting point is right, where you look at what was close.
Yes, absolutely.
Right? Because if a Democrat lost by
30
points and no Democrat has been elected there since, you know, the 1700s, then sure. Like, don't spend $50 million on that. But step two, the candidates part is where I fear that they're going to fuck it up, because they're going to say, all right, well, what these people are obviously looking for, because it's basically a 50-50 split amongst registered voters here. Is a 50-50 human. Yeah, exactly.
That's not...
And it's
no one's
not.
Ever been looking for that in any place.
Never
Just
once.
Because the vote
never
is close doesn't mean everyone's like, I hope we can get someone moderate
right.
in here.
Never once did a human vote for anybody who said, I stand for nothing.
Exactly. But we're running candidates left, right, and center who
all
say
over.
That. All over the place. And when they do stand for something, it's too hard to figure out what it is.
Right.
And you assume that whatever they mean isn't what they mean.
Or you only stand for Trump is evil.
Yeah. Which is not... That's all Hillary Clinton's for.
I was going to say, we already lost a national election based only on Trump is an idiot.
That's not a stance.
That's not a stance.
Because Trump being evil or not isn't what's actually going to affect people's pocketbooks.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
exactly.
It does in the sense that his evilness has larger effects on issues.
Right.
But what are those issues? What do we know? I think going to be very frustrating, and this is why I think the Perez versus Ellison thing was so important, is I think that Tom Perez is going to have a hard time thinking to himself, this seems like a kind of outrageous outcome for this district, but let's go with it. And I also think he's going to have a hard time thinking it matters if we run people in lost districts.
Yes.
Because the other thing you have to do with the 50-state strategy is run someone in every single district.
Right, exactly.
And you have to actually let them run. You have to support them as much as you can. Obviously, you put your big resources into districts that you think could really be, you know, contenders. But you have to, first of all, choose those districts carefully. And those districts are not always the closest districts.
Yep.
Because there are districts that will probably go farther into the red.
Well, that's what I was going to say.
This race continues. There will people will get more scared and more nervous about immigrants, and you know, their economic security is going to diminish. I mean, they're going to get more and more scared, and scared voters vote Republican a lot of the time.
And also, you know, we're going to talk about healthcare in a second. And while Republicans don't want kicked off of their healthcare, Republicans have been for years saying that they wanted to get rid of Obamacare. I think that, and it seemed like the GOP was not going to be able to get that done. Now it seems like perhaps there's a chance they might get it done. I think that's going to really embolden a lot of the base to like be like, let's have two more fucking years of this.
No, I think that we have to be careful about what kinds of assumptions we make about the close districts.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that if you see someone far outperforming the last Democrat to run in a hopeless district,
there's more to learn there.
There's more to learn there than there is with John Ossoff. You know, it'd be one thing if you ran a far left crazy person in that district, and then you were like, oh God, they didn't get elected. Like, that wouldn't be shocking to me.
No.
But you can't run someone who offers nothing and then put all of your money into that race, and then, you know, assume that you have done the right thing by ignoring all of the other races where we made up 19 points instead of making up, you know, two.
Yeah.
Or losing two.
Yeah, because I have seen a lot of people, you know, a lot of the Bernie haters have sort of like come out against, you know, these people that, or not come out against, but like have been ragging on the fact that like none of these lefty candidates
are winning races in places like Kansas, though.
Right, exactly. But those candidates have wildly outperformed what happened just basically months prior to it.
No, exactly.
And John Ossoff is getting
wildly
less than
underperforming.
He's getting less than he did in his own runoff race, and also less than Hillary Clinton got in, because Hillary Clinton almost won this race, which is, again, that's why they went and thought they were going to compete here.
Exactly.
So you're right. I think Tom Perez has the ability to have some of the right thoughts that get him to a certain decision-making point.
Howard Dean has that ability. Right. And Howard Dean is no lefty.
No, good God.
But Howard Dean was good at identifying what races were winnable and picking candidates who could win them. And and I think that we're in a different environment right now, because the kind of candidates that were winning those races are different than the kind of candidates that will win these. But if everywhere that Trump won by 20 points is suddenly a place where the Republican wins by 3 points or even 7 points, then we know something that was going on in those districts was the right thing.
Yes.
But those are going to be all wackadoodle candidates, because we're not putting any money into finding those candidates. We're not putting any money
That's very true.
And the ones that we do look for a candidate to run, we always find someone boring.
Boring, yeah.
I think about this a lot, because I think
what's important to think about?
The Florida Senate race against Marco Rubio, where they ran Patrick Murphy, is a good example of this, because that's a state where somebody kind of eccentric probably could have won that race. Yeah. Marco Rubio was not super popular there, and he had been faltering because he lost candidate. He said he wasn't going to run. He's always been embroiled in a bunch of scandals having to do with the era of corruption that erupted when he was in office there.
Yeah.
But we found a John Ossoff to run there.
Yeah.
The party handpicked that person.
Yeah.
They put all their money into it because he was a rich person. And so they figured, well, he already has money, so we'll give him more.
Yeah.
And they weren't able to perform in that state. And I think Florida is another state where that was statewide office in Florida. Florida elects Democrats sometimes. You can get a Democrat elected in Florida. It's hard in a presidential year to make that kind of transition, but it wasn't a traditional candidate that was running for president as a Republican. So I think we have to be careful about picking the Murphys as our star players.
Yep.
Because this is our current choice of star players. Yeah.
And now there's 81% of the vote in, and it's unchanged.
Yep.
So I'm sort of waiting for that to just be called.
It would be really exciting if they call it just as we finish the podcast. And then we do get to report breaking news, but we got to keep you all in suspense for a full hour.
Oh, my God.
Wouldn't that be amazing?
Yeah.
While we're waiting, let's talk about this healthcare bill.
Oh, God. Okay. Well, looks like it's happening.
I know. What did we say? But first of all,
well, we told you on the last podcast about how it appeared as though what the Republicans were going to do were they were going to just push off the Medicare cuts.
Right.
So now it seems like we've got some more information, but we don't really know if it's the right information because
we, no one's seen the bill still.
Because it's secret. So it's all like sort of, you know, more leaks, more exciting leaks. We're going to tell you about the details in a little bit, but it seems like there is going to be a vote at some point at the end of next week, which, coming from weeks ago when we were telling you on the podcast that Mitch McConnell was doing interviews saying that he didn't think it was going to get done in 2017 and didn't know how they'd get to votes.
Reason they're trying to rush it is they want to do it before the July 4th holiday because they're going to have to go to their districts and hear from constituents if that happens. And that's going to be a problem.
Yeah.
Because their own constituents don't want this.
No.
It's like the fact that they're like stubbornly insisting on doing this and then hiding from their constituents is the most fascinating part of all of this. Like, who has a gun to their head that actually has leverage? Because I know that everyone has a gun to their head, but who has actual leverage? That joke might have been in poor taste considering there was a congressional shooting that we aren't reporting
on
in the last week.
Yeah, that happened. You know about that.
You know about it, though. Yeah. But in any case, I'm just sort of like curious who has the leverage here because it's not apparently their constituents.
No.
They're doing this specifically to avoid their constituents in every step of the way.
Right.
They're writing the bill in secret.
Yep.
They're going to vote on it without much debate. They're not going to do any public hearings. They're trying to vote on it before they have to go home next to face their actual constituents.
Yeah.
And all the Democrats have been left with is essentially holding the floor in the Senate to lecture at length about whatever they feel like because there's nothing else they can do to hold up this business.
Right, exactly. Because they can't actually filibuster it because the whole point of the way that the Republicans are doing this bill is that they're doing it under the budget whatever so they can pass it with just 50. They can pass it with 50 votes.
Yeah.
So there's nothing to be done for the Democrats, other than to just sort of like make as big a scene about it as possible. And I mean, that is probably the thing to do. So
that's
do. You know, like they're doing it right, I guess, but that's all they can do.
Yeah. Mitch McConnell says they're going to have a meeting on the Senate floor with an unlimited amendment process.
Well, I hope somebody's got a stack of a thousand amendments lined
this
up.
This is where I feel like Bernie Sanders could really.
I was just about to say that. God.
Like, he could get in there. He could turn this into Medicare for All if he worked hard enough.
Totally.
I mean, if he could.
He's the king of amendments.
He's the king. He's the amendment.
That's what they call him.
When you're a fringe, you know, when you're a fringe senator,
that's what
you do to get things done.
I know.
So if there's anyone prepared for this moment, it's one Bernie Sanders.
I would like to remind people of that really quick because the reason that he is called that is because, you know, he took some flack in that primary for not getting anything done.
Yeah.
But Hillary Clinton was the progressive that got things done. Nobody knows what that means.
No one knows what that means, especially her constituents, because that's not exactly what our experience was when she was our senator.
Right.
But
she was a non-progressive.
She got the Iraq War done. Started at least.
Yeah. he got a lot done, but no, he didn't have his name on any bills. But nobody has got more amendments snuck into bills to fund things that they wanted to be funded than Bernie Sanders. He's a professional at it.
Yeah.
And that's what you have to do. He doesn't have a party.
Of us regulating pork spending bills. So it used to be that everyone operated this way, basically, to get money for their districts.
Yeah.
That's not the world Bernie Sanders is in right now. He's the amendment king because in this world where there's all these regulations about pork spending balancing, you know, and having the bill having to pay for itself and all this bullshit,
were a person who went to a community health center, you went there because that was funded via various different amendments that Bernie Sanders snuck into varying different spending bills.
So we're hoping that Bernie Sanders manages to end this this supposed unlimited amendment session with a Medicare for All bill called the Affordable Health Care for Americans Act or whatever they're calling the
Ed Chu bill. He'd probably get it. It's more likely to pass if he offered it that said, take everyone's health care away and start over or something like that.
If we just titled this bill, we're taking away your health care, and then it was just called Medicare for
All. Get a rubber stamp out of this Congress.
Yeah, exactly.
And from the president.
In any case, he's our only hope.
Yeah.
Is our point.
As always.
But for now, everyone is just doing the only thing that Democrats seem good at doing at the moment and just blathering on incessantly about details because they've been left with no other legislative tools.
Yeah. Chuck Schumer said that the closed-door Republican meetings on health care amounted to, quote, the most glaring departure from normal legislative procedure that I have ever seen.
Well, I mean, this is all a departure from legislative procedure.
The only reason that you operate this way is because you know.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing that I think is so bizarre about this.
Yeah.
They are essentially admitting that they know.
Yeah, exactly.
They're admitting that they know. And I think the putting off the cuts is a cowardly thing to do. For one thing, because I think they don't intend to actually let the cuts happen. I think that they think that they intend to let the cuts happen in a sort of in the way that, you know, Donald Trump often thinks he thinks things that he doesn't know anything about.
Right.
I think that likely this is a move to appease some crazier whoever has the gun to their head.
Right.
Whether it's some sort of advocacy group or lobbying group that we're not aware of, or the Freedom Caucus or whoever it is. This is to appease them, and it sort of aligns with their point of view. But most of those guys who've been in the Senate for a million years know that this isn't actually how you're able to do business in the Senate.
Also, they'll be dead by the time that anybody has to deal with this.
I mean, they are trying to change precedents, but it's very hard to change this precedent without some backlash. So I think that they're trying to sort of like get it far enough out that someone can get in there and stop it before it starts. And I hope that
All of the states that won it will have just passed their own Medicare for All bill.
They are trying to basically pass the buck so that they can change the precedent without taking the flack.
Right.
But the fact that they're doing it so secretly, it means that they know that they're doing something that people don't actually want.
Right.
And I just can't figure out why being so publicly brazen about how incompetent you're being is a strategy they've chosen to pursue. I hope that, like, it's like how, you know, during the Clinton years, everyone was like, oh, things are going fine. It's the Clinton years. The worst thing that we have to worry about is Monica Lewinsky scandal, blah, blah, blah.
Sure.
And then in 20 years later, we've all been like, oh, they did a lot of shit in the Clinton years that we didn't think about at the time, because at the time it didn't matter. But like when they deregulated the stock market, that caused a problem later.
Yeah.
Like, I think that this is the opposite of that kind of thing, where the moment it happens, it's going to have effects that they aren't anticipating or that they aren't thinking will have the kind of public backlash that they'll have. And it will just like wreak havoc on the system.
Well, let's hope.
I mean, I don't think that you can cut away healthcare in a way that doesn't make people notice for 20 years. The Clintons were masters at doing shitty things that no one noticed for 20 years.
Right.
I don't think it's as easy to do that with healthcare. And I think they're playing it like they think that they're going to do that. Because there were plenty of things that at the time we were like, should we really be doing this with the Clintons? And we were just like, what are we going to do? Right. Things are fine. Exactly. Yeah. This is not going to play out that way, I don't think. Well,
I was going to say, I think the difference is that it's, I mean, granted, some of the things that they did with deregulation ended up affecting people in ways that those people probably supported at the time and had no idea that it was going to end up that way. But like some of the things that healthcare affects all of us directly. Like that's like people in an immediate way. And I think differently in a way that like, all right, you can sign NAFTA, and like, you know, we'll know in 20 years that we don't have any manufacturing jobs anymore.
Right.
You can, you know, pass the crime bill and like, okay, well, a bunch of black people are going to go to prison, but who really cares? You know, like, I mean,
right. You can make changes where the consequences won't be immediate and visceral.
Right.
And they also won't, like, you know, welfare reform is the closest to this that the Clintons attempted, but welfare only affects poor people in the immediate sense.
Right.
It affects all of us in the larger sense, but you don't think about
that. Poor people don't get a say in politics,
guys. No, of course not. That would be ridiculous. You have to buy it.
Yeah.
But I think healthcare is different because healthcare is it's like we're under attack right now.
I know,
there's
seriously.
Like the helicopter circling us. If we don't make it through the end of this podcast, please call our moms. in any case, healthcare is different because it's a kind of social spending that has an immediate impact on the kind of people that do vote and vote in a way that makes them valuable.
Right.
It's not old people. It's not just poor people. It's not, you know, it definitely targets those people. This bill will do that. But if you don't think that this bill is also going to raise premiums on just like random middle class people or cause a sort of short-term breakdown that their states will have to resolve. And the thing is, some of our states will resolve those things and some of them will not.
Yeah.
And the states that will resolve it may end up with better healthcare in the end because they'll be forced to listen to their constituents who were thinking of this as a federal issue and suddenly are going to be like, California, tell me what we're going to do.
Yeah.
But it's not, it's going to cause a kind of like everyday hassle for regular people who are healthy.
Right.
And that isn't what you want.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So we still don't know what's in the bill, but they have sent the bill to the CBO.
Yes.
So there is a bill.
Yeah.
because last week we didn't even know if there was a bill.
Right.
This week we know there's a bill. It's been it's gone to the CBO.
Right. There's no public
public draft of it. They're going to have to vote on it so fast when the CBO score comes out that it's going to make everyone's head spin. So keep your eyes peeled for what happens.
Exactly. Yeah. And call these people, by the way, too.
Yeah. Call
your mom has really been doing the people's work on this. She's really getting people to call about this. She's been posting and various other things.
My mother is also running a website in upstate New York that it's called Seeds of Democracy that basically allows people to figure out in New York, which is heavily gerrymandered, who their representatives are, what they're doing. And then at the state level, this is the 19th district, what they're voting on every day. So what the actual votes they're casting are. Kind of like how Countable will do that for you as well.
You'll get it right,
MegaVote will do that for you as well. But she's running a district for the 19th that does
that.
But consider doing something like that for your own district where it doesn't have to be the votes as they're being done. You know, you can sign up for others for services that will do that.
Totally.
But that tell people in your district how to contact the people they need to contact in a situation like this. Because just getting people the phone numbers is, you know, as an easy thing is like a,
basic way to do it. Facebook politics now also has that.
You can
do it within Facebook, and I think even within the app.
But the difference is that you have to look it up in Facebook, and you should make it so that people don't have to look it up.
Agreed. Yes.
Tell your friends that they don't have to look it up, and they should just call.
Yeah.
But so in any case, we're not positive what's in the bill, but what we do know is what we knew last week, which is that what we said, their dream of ending Medicaid as an entitlement is part of this legislation.
Yeah, it might be more nefarious than we actually thought it was. Because it seems like what they're doing is they're trying to get rid of it on entirely. They're pushing it down the road, and initially they're going to give more funding for it.
Right.
So that basically it can then even be pushed even a little bit further. Basically, they're giving states block grants for certain amounts of money at that point, and they're going to continue to fund it up to a certain point, but then
there's
going to
be per capita caps.
But then when they stop the funding or come back from it, where they start to it happens much more drastically than
and also these block grants have a predetermined inflation rate that bears no relation to what the actual inflation rate on medical care is going to be.
Yeah.
And so over time, we have no idea whether even within the part where they're still funding it, the funding will be adequate.
Yep.
And block grants, because they're not a per capita funding mechanism, they mean that if something drastic happens and a zillion more people in your state join Medicaid, get extra funding for that.
Right. The way that we treat that that program now is that basically how it works is we have promised that we will fund whatever amount of money it is for
the number of
people that actually have it.
Yeah.
What the Republicans want to do is to end that. So there's basically only a finite amount of money. And when that money runs out and maybe you're still sick with cancer, then, shucks for you.
Here's the thing about this. If you live in a state that's any state, there's only two ways this goes. One is that people die unnecessarily, and that includes people you know. That isn't just people you don't know who are poor who live somewhere else. That will include people that you know.
Yeah.
Second is your taxes go up. Not your federal taxes, but your state taxes. So there's only two things that happen here, and the thing that you don't have...
But at least initially, rich people's taxes will go down, which is the point.
Thank God for that. No, but I mean, you have to think about this carefully if you're in a state like Mississippi. In Mississippi, your taxes probably...
They're not thinking carefully, Dan.
Well, of course not. But I mean, in a state like Mississippi...
Well, let's tell them anyway.
Your taxes may not go up at the state level. You certainly will see a lot of people die. But the thing that you're going to lose out on is funding that comes from our tax dollars. Because this is where the federal money runs out.
Yeah.
Once the federal money runs out, you're either left in a situation where your lame state that doesn't have a tax base because you have nothing going on is stuck with the bill.
Right.
Or everyone dies.
Right, exactly.
There's not... There's not a good... This
because
is not
they're
a smart
not going to fund
move.
It, because how can
this
they?
This isn't a smart move for the the welfare states, as
no,
it were.
No, it's not.
It's not. It's a fine move for donor states.
Right.
Because when we stop having to pay that money, we can tax rich people here.
Yeah.
As long as they don't regulate taxing rich people here. There's another nefarious thing going on where they're trying to figure out something that could prevent states from taxing rich people. Because your tax thing, your taxes won't be... You won't be able to write off your state taxes or some bullshit. But I mean... We can choose in states that have the money to do whatever we decide to do.
Yeah.
And if we need to make drastic decisions, like we need to raise our state taxes because poor people cannot die in this state, we have the ability to do that. Maybe we won't. Maybe we'll be assholes too. But we're facing the same decision, which is either people die,
right,
including people we know,
right,
or our taxes go up. I would rather my taxes go up than people die, even if they're people I don't know.
Well, but and the one thing I will say about California is God bless
we
us.
We love a tax increase
in this state. We will vote for any, like the other 49 will literally vote for any tax, you know, cut that gets in front of them.
In California,
we're literally love a good tax increase.
We're directly voting for every one of our tax increases, like, and we're passing all of them.
I was talking to one of my relatives at that wedding that I went back to, like, in Peoria last year, who's a conservative, and, like, I sort of, like, didn't want to get too deeply into politics, but, like, we weren't even talking about politics, but she just, like, made some sort of, like, snide remark about, you know, the taxes being too high in California, and I was like, well, we voted for all of them.
Right.
And she was, like, horrified, you know, but it's, like, anyway, so.
But, yeah. I mean, that's, if you are, if, and we should, because we are voting for them for things. They're always for education, they're for healthcare, they're for homeless services. These are all things we need.
Yeah.
I don't mind if my taxes go up for services that affect people in need.
Yeah, the common good.
I mind if they go up because we're, like, going to war or some shit.
Sure.
But I certainly don't mind if they're going up to, you know, for the common good. And I think that the more extreme the federal government gets, the more extreme that mentality will have to get in some of these other states.
Agreed.
But I...
And they may wise up to it at a certain point.
I mean, they always wise up to it.
It might take, you know, like...
It might take too long.
It might take too long. It might take, you know, like the plague killing half of their state or something like that, because nobody can get healthcare. But
they always wise up to it in the end.
Sure.
The states where everyone's super desperate eventually do always wise up to it.
Yeah.
Kansas knows what happened now.
Right.
They just increased taxes there.
Right, exactly.
And
yes.
Overrode a veto from Brownback because they know what's happening.
Right.
Now. They get it. It's I don't think you can make these kinds of cuts and think to yourself, we're doing it for the good of you know, for the good of the tax.
Or we're gonna get away with it.
Or we're getting away with it. Because that's money that isn't actually coming from your state, that's being given to it by other states who will just have the money if you don't want it.
Right.
You know, the money money either stays here or goes to Mississippi, but it doesn't have to, I guess. We don't have to. I mean, I would rather people in Mississippi not be dying.
Sure.
But if they, for some reason, are voting for people that want them to die, then, you know, I the only thing I can control is what I'm asked to pay, you know,
like,
and what what the priorities I vote for.
Yeah.
I know that the more that you disenfranchise people with things like this, the harder it is for them to get them back.
Yeah.
And I think that the opposite is true. The more you give people of services, the harder it is to take them away.
Yeah.
And I think that the one thing the Affordable Care Act that we always complimented about the Affordable Care Act was that it made healthcare a mandate. It made it so that we believed every single person deserved it and should have it.
Right.
And it is going to be very hard to say, oh, sorry, every single person should have it except all of you.
Yeah.
Sorry, Mississippi, California's not going to pay for your healthcare anymore.
Yeah, exactly. And this sort of ending, this sort of, the next thing that I'm sort of like going to go on a tangent about, sort
perfect.
Of, I feel like, ties the first story and this story together with the election. I don't know why the Democrats, and we have said this on the podcast, but as time passes, I just become more and more convinced of it. The Democrats have to go out in 2018 and they have to run on Medicare for All.
Yes.
Because, not just because I think it's the right thing to do and I think politically it's the smart thing to do and I think people will take to it and I think places that you haven't won in a long time are going to love it and I think places that were close, you're going to win.
Racist people will vote for you if you're talking about giving them healthcare a lot of the time.
But so, beyond that, I feel like, especially if the Republicans do end up passing this, you know, a lot of people, realized that maybe they liked Obamacare better than they thought they did once they realized that the Republicans were about to take all of their healthcare away.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is, nobody really ever loved Obamacare.
Well, and there are still flaws with it. Even Democrats have to admit that it is flawed. It is too expensive. It does not cover everybody.
Right.
There are major gaps in its coverage.
Yeah. So the Democrats are, if this GOP bill passes, are going to be faced with a problem. And the problem is that they're going to run on how terrible this healthcare bill is. And then what? You know, we ragged on the Republicans all the time for, like, talking about how they were going to repeal and replace. But really, repeal was the only portion.
Right, because they had never thought about replacing
it. They had never thought about replacing it. The Democrats are going to have to go out and think about repeal and replace. And they can't go out and tell all of these people in these congressional districts that they just want to go back to Obamacare. Because that is a losing strategy. Like, they will lose in all of the same places and potentially even more new places. New and exciting places that they never even imagined if they don't have a better solution than both Obamacare and this garbage GOP bill.
Yeah.
And the only thing left to fucking try, it seems to me, is Medicare for All.
And Medicare for All has the advantage of being simple to understand.
Simple, right.
It's a goal. You don't have to say, we're going to pass Medicare for All tomorrow. I don't think Bernie Sanders was ever, I mean, we could. It'd be easy.
Yeah.
We could do it. Yeah. But I mean, I don't think that that's even what he was talking about.
Yeah.
He was saying, you know, here's a start. We got a start. The president's health care bill was a start.
Yeah.
We can do better, though. Yeah. This is the goal. This is what we're moving towards.
Yes.
This is what the rest of the world has. We could have it, too.
Yep.
And Hillary Clinton kept saying, well, wouldn't it be nice if we could have that thing? But we can't.
Exactly.
You know, I think that
we can have nice things.
We can have nice things, you guys. We have, like, all the money.
We have the first step is deciding that we want to have them.
Yeah. That's right. It's like a self-help manual.
Yes.
You have to visualize what you want before...
Yeah.
You can have it because you have to name it first.
Right, exactly.
You have to have a word for
it. Exactly. I just think if the Democrats made that their 2018 rallying cry, I mean, and really went in hard on it, I just think it would be like they would see spectacular results.
And also, here's what we know. They wouldn't do worse than they're doing now.
Couldn't
possibly.
Couldn't and wouldn't.
They couldn't and wouldn't.
Right.
The districts where we're seeing impressive results in districts that we lost by a huge amounts are districts where the candidates have supported Medicare for All openly. For the most part, those huge gains have been made by candidates in deep red states saying that they're in favor of Medicare
for
All.
Districts except that were the South Carolina race wins for Trump.
The South Carolina race likely not that case.
Yeah, exactly.
But I mean, in Kansas and in Montana, that's what we were seeing.
Yeah.
I think that there are a lot of districts that resonates with because Trump accidentally endorsed it at one point.
Exactly.
Because
his
voters actually do think that this is a good idea. A lot of people think this is a good idea. People
at
Trump rallies told newspapers
Virginia.
They thought this was a good idea. Bernie Sanders easily won over a room filled with angry, irate Republicans
Republican
in West Virginia by telling them this was a good idea.
Yep.
This is a win of an idea.
Yep.
And you can fail at doing it as long as you tried.
Yep.
You know, maybe they wouldn't be able to do it. That would be too bad. But I mean, they could at least try.
Right.
They're not trying anything else.
Yeah.
Trying to maintain a system that is still too expensive for a majority of people, that still has left something like 30 million people uninsured, that still, you know, is subject to the whims of the courts because we still constantly hear, oh, these subsidies aren't legal. These, you know, the cost, you know, cost sharing payments aren't legal.
Right.
You know, there's always a threat that that something small will unravel the whole thing.
Yeah.
Medicare works. People on Medicare like Medicare. That's why back in the Bush era, people used to walk up to Bush and say, don't keep your government hands off my Medicare.
Right.
They didn't know it was a government program, but they knew they liked it.
And Republican governors like it a lot, too. The ones who took the expansion.
The ones who took the expansion found it worked well for them.
Yes.
I agree with you. I think that a plan that harps on a thing that was never wildly popular because it needed more. And Obama knew that. I mean, you know, at the time, we knew that it needed more.
And look, there are obviously
it was a compromise deal.
Right. And look, like we should be I think a lot of Democrats, especially the ones who were there when that passed, I think it's almost sort of like a pride thing with them. And on some level, let it go. Yes. I get it, though. Like, I mean, yes, you were the party and you were the Congress and you were a part of, you know, a transcendent presidential candidacy and administration. And you got healthcare done and we'd been trying to do it for decades. And like, slow
but
clap
to you. But the thing
is,
everyone knew it wasn't done.
Right. Exactly.
Everyone knew it wasn't done. And if they had admitted that it wasn't done, and then said, but that's okay, because here's what we plan to do.
Right.
That would be different than what they ran on in 2016, which was, they want to take it away, and we got it done.
Right, it's fine, guys.
Because every single person who's on the exchange who is paying for healthcare
right.
knows that it's too expensive.
Right, knows they're
we're
paying
not,
too much.
We're not right. realizing that.
Yeah.
And every single person who was forced by the mandate to suddenly look into buying coverage, who wasn't covering themselves because they couldn't afford it,
right.
is not suddenly thinking, they're thinking, thank God an option became open.
Right.
But they're not thinking to themselves, I love paying this money for healthcare.
Sure are.
They're
aren't.
Thinking to themselves, I feel very conflicted about this at, right. at best.
Yeah.
You know, I think that you have to, even if you have legislative wins, you have to be able to move forward from them.
Yeah.
You have to be able to say, okay, we did that. Here's what's next.
Yeah.
You can't just be like, this very flawed strategy that Republicans originally proposed is done, and now it's done, and we did it. You know, it's just, it's not rocket science.
Yeah.
But I think that the thing that the Democrats are bad at and will be lacking in this round is a positive message to move forward with that. I mean, that's what they didn't have in 2016
right.
either. No one really understood what their platform was.
Right.
And this is such an easy thing to make your
so
platform.
Easy. So easy.
And it will put Cory Booker in a very awkward situation, which is my favorite thing about it.
I know, right? Oh my God. We get to report real life breaking news.
You guys.
It's over.
It's over.
So I shouldn't have acted so excited, but John Ossoff got his ass handed to him.
Come on, everybody.
Yeah.
Come all the way on. I like... You guys, it's a moment of silence moment. For
I was just
my
about
sanity.
To say it for, right, I know. I was going to say for our country, but...
My sanity is more important at the moment.
Right, I agree.
This
it's about us right now.
This just like can't keep happening because any momentum that we had in terms of all of us galvanizing to hate Donald Trump
right.
is going to dissipate if we can't win an election.
I know.
And we're not winning these elections because it's not possible.
Right.
And the country's too divided and there's too much going on, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
We're not winning these elections because nobody in their right minds would think to themselves, I'm excited to go to the polls and vote for John Ossoff. They might think, I guess I'll hold my breath and just sort of, or hold my nose and just do this.
Yep.
Your breath, or hold everything.
Right.
But I mean, that's, you have to run a candidate that people are like, he's quirky, but I like him. You know,
yeah.
I mean, that's what I think. That's why you had that weird thing happen in Kansas.
Yeah.
People were like, this guy's kind of eccentric, but we're on board.
Yep, exactly. Oh, boy.
In any case.
Anyway, that's it.
What a surprise turn of events. A wasted $50 million that we could have spent on literally any other human being who could have won that race, probably.
Oh, God.
That's... I would have been interested to see how a really far-left person would have performed.
Fascinating.
I mean, maybe they wouldn't have won. I'm not saying that I think they would have won, necessarily.
Yeah.
I just think it would have been interesting to see how a break from the traditional language would have performed, would have jarred everyone.
Yeah.
Because one of the reasons it's working right now is it's a break from the sort of traditional language, and so people are, it makes people pay attention.
Yeah.
When someone says, I'll be working across the aisle, everyone's like, fuck you, guy. We've
right.
heard enough of that bullshit. Like, John Ossoff sounded like he was talking to us from 1994.
Yeah.
And I think we want people that sound like they're talking to us from 1960, apparently, and not 1994.
Right.
But I mean, it's jarring when someone says things that you aren't expecting a politician to say, and it's easy to ignore someone who wasn't.
Agreed.
Yeah, he managed to underperform his own performance. So we did it, America.
Congratulations.
Disappointed us once again.
Mm-hmm. Oh, boy. And in final news.
In final news, we finally heard Jared Kushner's voice.
Yes. This was brought to our attention by that. Did you see that? Now I'm drawing a blank on his name. Who's on? John Oliver.
Yeah.
On
the
HBO
John
did
Oliver
the thing where he was like, here's
voice.
We finally found a clip of Jared Kushner's voice. And then they like, you know, comped in like a ridiculous
Kermit
sounding,
the
like
Frog.
Kermit the Frog cartoon voice. Yeah. Well, he spoke this week.
Yeah.
Guys,
it
we
happened.
Know what he sounds like. It sounded not as bad as I thought it was going to sound, but also nothing like I thought it was going to. It's hard to place what you think a person is going to sound
like. I thought he was going to sound more feminine than he did.
That's interesting. He sounded sort of almost like a politician who'd been doing it for a while.
I know.
On some level. Like, I was sort of like, oh.
I feel like that's how he's getting away with everything.
I think you might be right. Is he sounds like a person who, like...
He sounds like John Ossoff.
That guy. That he does.
You know, he's like the same hair, the same hair.
They're almost the same age. They're a very similar genre of person.
Yeah, a boring genre of person
that's
who
the one.
May or may not have morals.
That's the genre.
Yeah, but Yeah, he sounded, for some reason, because he's always taking these very, he's always posing in these very dainty looking ways in photographs, I thought he was going to sound slightly more feminine than he did.
Yeah, sort of swishy.
And he sounded more sort of like.
People still saying that, swishy.
Oh, yeah. Okay. People around the elderly Palm Springs circuit, okay. Certainly.
Well, that's where I just was this weekend.
That's where you were, so you.
Right. I saw a lot of swishy people this weekend visiting my parents. So.
But, yeah, I thought he would sound more like a, like, I don't know, I thought. He would sound, would have a lighter voice.
Yeah.
But he sounded just kind of like a bro person.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like a bro man.
Yeah.
A bro boy.
Sure. Stop there. I can see you're still thinking about the next bro thing that you're going to say, and you shouldn't.
The bro human. The bro person. Yeah, he sounded like a person who lives in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
Where he does.
Yes.
So it
bingo.
Worked out perfectly. Yep. Oh, and Melania moved. She's there now.
Oh, I didn't know that.
She's in the White House now. Oh. They did it. Great. They packed her up and dragged her there, and now she can awkwardly not hold Trump's hand on the way to many of Marine One visit.
More photographs of that.
More photographs of their uncomfortable relationship on display now?
Yeah.
I think it was the hand-holding dramas that actually probably forced this decision.
It might have been.
Because I don't think she was interested.
Well,
and rumor has it that she's been having an affair with the general manager of Tiffany's for quite some time.
Well, I mean, that's if you're a... That,
and
yeah, great. Good for her.
I'm for it. Yeah, I was going to say, I get it, Melania.
Yeah. Yeah.
She's a victim of this whole situation. Yeah. I get it. I don't hold her responsible.
No.
And I think that she should go sleep with anybody else.
She wanted to be first lady basically about as much as Trump wanted to actually be president.
Exactly. Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah,
which was not
which
really
was none.
All.
Not at all, yeah.
Yeah.
So in any case, on Sunday we'll talk about some of the other news.
Yeah,
we know about the video of Philando Castile that came out today. We've got to talk about that. We'll talk a little bit about this congressional shooting that we alluded to by accidentally making a joke about it.
It's midweek. We had important things to say about important things, not that these other things aren't important. And you know what?
Lila got in
at 2 a.m. last night.
What do you want from me?
Yeah, seriously.
So, our nation's capital.
Yeah, exactly.
Where I actually got into the African American History Museum.
Oh, that's right. You said that.
It turns out.
Let's talk about that on Sunday, too, because I want to know all about it.
If you are a veteran, you can just get in. I'm not a veteran, but I was with a veteran.
Right. Yes.
But they don't say that anywhere on the website. And so we went to go wait in line because they release a bunch of tickets at 1 p.m. because it's impossible to get a ticket to that museum.
Yeah.
And so we were going to have to wait on this long line. And we were just sort of asking follow-up questions to the woman just to see if we learned anything new. And she was like, yeah, no, we don't know how many tickets there are, but, you know, unless you're an Army or first responder or veteran. And we were like, veteran?
Yeah.
And then we just walked right in.
Genius.
Yeah. So it was great.
Nice.
It was cool. I recommend doing it if you can get in.
Yeah, right. Seriously. We'll tell you
all
about it
veteran.
On Sunday, apparently.
Yeah, we'll tell you all about it on Sunday. We'll talk to you then.
Bye.